powered by Reb Media in partnership with TSN. It is season 5, episode 50 of the Rain Dregs Hockey Podcast, presented by our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, who have introduced the first release of the Canadian Club Invitation Series CC 15-year-old Sherry Cask. All the hallmarks of classic Canadian Club with the added richness and sweetness of Sherry. And there you are, Ray, in the, I guess, the home studio. And here I am at the beautiful Fairfield Inn in Florida, covering nice. NHL general manager's meetings, which will take a big part of our headlines. But good guests today. We always have good guests on the Rain Drinks podcast. But Devon Taves, who I know you appreciate the game that he plays for the Colorado Avalanche, and really the evolution of a player who has had a kind of a wild path, I would say, but a path of progression, right? From the BCHL, BC Junior Hockey League, through the NCAA, through the American League, and now a star on the blue line with the Avalanche.
Yeah, I think it's the last part that intrigues me the most, Riggs, is that he's a star. Is that lots of players go through lots of windy roads to get to the NHL because not everybody is a Nate McKinnon or a Connor McDavid or Cale Makar. And so you dig your way and you try to make your way. And he went that path, and all of a sudden people realize, oh, wait a minute, he's really good. Yeah. So Colorado traded a couple of draft picks for him back in the day, and he slowly established himself from they got a pretty good defenseman to a guy I think has to be almost a lock, like that close to a pick for Canada's Olympic team. I mean, he's an amazing player, and it would be hard to walk past a Makar and Taves tandem for Canada. Yeah, he's a terrific guy. He's a really well spoken, thought out guy, and from a guy just hoping to get a degree to a $50 million contract, it's worked out pretty well.
Yeah, well, and then look at that blue line for Colorado. Not to go into a deep dive here, the Avalanche. We'll talk about a bunch of things coming up on headlines. But Sean Walker, who was just acquired via trade, is what, like a third pairing guy for the Colorado Avalanche? Like, that's just how deep they are on that back end.
Well, now you go, and they were moving people around, and they did delete Bo Byram.
Yeah.
In the Casey Mittelstadt trade, and they'll miss Byram. He's a good player, and he'll fit well in Buffalo and the style that they play. But all of a sudden now they've got Makar, Manson, Walker on the right side. And you're like, that's more than pretty good. And Walker got 2 goals the other day. And he's another guy I got a lot of respect for. He, 2 years ago, he was badly hurt in L.A., ACL, MCL, total reconstruction. Last year, just didn't have it, It was okay, but it wasn't. He goes to Philly because L.A.'s got to dump some cap money, and goes there, has a really good year. Philly gets a first-round pick for him, and and now he's a key member of, I think, one of the league's best 2 or 3 teams.
Agreed. Time for headlines, Ray, brought to you by Tim Hortons. Roll Up to Win is back with big, big prizes to celebrate the 60th anniversary of Tim Hortons. Guests who reveal 60 rolls during the contest period are also eligible for a chance to win a 60th roll reveal prize. So for the full list of prizes, which are incredible, by the way, and all the details, more contest information, you can visit rolluptowin.ca. So the Department of Player Safety involved in breakout groups yesterday. I mean, I'm fascinated by these breakout groups of NHL general managers, hockey operations people, commissioner's office people. They get together 4 or 5 groups, right, on day one, and they talk about a myriad of things. I mean, it could be anything from coaches' challenges to whatever. Doesn't matter.
Is every GM assigned one group?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. And I mean, normally you'd have 2 or 3, maybe 4 general managers in one group. But, you've got George Parros, who's the head of Department of Player Safety, in a group. Patrick Burke, who's, in player safety, would be in another group. you know, Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly would be in one group, Colin Campbell and the hockey ops guys in another. So they're spread all over the place. How they put these groups together, I can't be sure. But the sense that I'm getting, we'll learn more about this today, is that even in the breakout groups, Paros was being peppered by some of the general managers, you know, for just the process of meting out supplemental discipline from the beginning of the incident to how you end up, you know, assessing X number of games for the infraction. And this is day two of the meetings as we record here on Tuesday. So we'll be reporting on this on SportsCenter and TSN and TSN.ca. I don't like when I say that Paros is coming under fire. What I mean is it comes with the territory, right? He's the head of a department that nobody is happy with. You know, if you've got a player who's in supplemental discipline, you're not happy about that. But you and I have had this conversation multiple times here on the podcast, and the word inconsistency always seems to creep into the conversation, right? In terms of, well, why is this infraction a 4 or 5 game suspension, and that one is a 1 or 2 game suspension? So I don't think there's anything wrong with checks and balances, whether you're the head of the Department of Player Safety, or you're Stephen Walken, the head of officiating, or you're Commissioner Gary Bettman. That comes with a job, doesn't it?
Well, it does for sure. I mean, just even in the lack of understanding how that decision gets handed out, Driggs, is that, so Morgan Riley got, what did he get, 5 games? For
5 games, yeah, for the hit on Ridley Gregg after the slap shot into the
empty net. No history, 5 games, no injury, right? The league always, the player safety always say injuries do matter.
Yeah,
correct.
Yes,
Matt Rempe gets 4 games for his elbow on Jogas Siegenthaler. Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, he just did talk to the Department of Player Safety, and Siegenthaler was hurt.
Yeah.
That's a concussion. Now, this isn't to say one player is worse than the other or anything other than that, but you can't say injuries matter and then the suspension doesn't equal the words that you've said.
Right.
Like there has to be a connect between all of it. And I think the biggest complaint people like broadcasters, media, players, coaches, fans all have is when there's a suspension that's going to be reviewed, nobody has any idea what it's going to be. And you shouldn't be able to get the number right all the time. Well, maybe you should, but you should be able to be in the ballpark.
Right.
And I think for most of us, all those groups that I mentioned, it's a guess every time. I think it should be 5 and it's 2. I think it should be 3. Rarely do you say it should be 3 and it's 7.
Yeah.
That never happens.
Yeah.
But it's kind of all over the map. So maybe out of this, they streamline the process. They come up with a better roadmap to getting to the decision that's going to be made that not many people are going to be happy with anyway.
Right, right. Anyway, I mean, Paros has faced the heat before. He's not afraid. Again, that comes with the job. It just... this meeting here in Florida this week, it definitely has a different feel to it around the Department of Player Safety. So we'll keep you posted. We'll revisit this, chances are, later
many
in the week
times.
In the next
episode. Probably many times.
Yeah. Playoff salary cap rate, we've also talked about this. And it's not officially on the agenda here at the GM's meetings, but I know that the executive committee of the general managers met, I believe, on Sunday. And they discussed it. And the takeaway was, all right, well, this isn't the first time we've talked about this. So let's assess this a little bit more. And it's complicated. We know this, right? It's a collective bargaining agreement with the Players Association. So it's not like you can just say, okay, as of next year, we're starting with a playoff salary cap. It's not that easy. It would have to be negotiated. But it's interesting that they're at least willing to have that conversation among that smaller group, right? And the takeaway is, okay, well, let's at least consider it for the future. And you guys come back to us, being the commissioner's office, and tell us what you think. And then we'll decide whether or not we want to engage with the Players Association or not. So sounds like it's at least on the table at this point.
Okay, so The only way this really becomes an issue is if a team is able to stash somebody on long-term injury and they become eligible to play in the playoffs. There's no, unless I'm missing it, Dregs, is there any other reason or any other way around this scenario? Okay, so remember when we had no video review for offsides and then Matt Duchene went 38 feet offside and they scored and then we had video review. So you can say, yes, it's a rare event and it doesn't happen very often and there's no need to look at a salary cap in the playoffs because it happens rather rarely. But if it happens once a year, then that's not rare. That means it happens all the time. It happens every playoff.
Right.
It happened with Kucherov. It's happened with Vegas before. It's happening with Vegas again. Yeah. And that's and that only becomes an issue if the injured player is able to come back. I think the in the playoffs, I think the part that tweaks people is when the injured player comes back in game one of the playoffs.
Yeah, yeah.
That just stinks. It smells bad, right?
Yeah.
I'm a full supporter of a salary cap in the playoffs. Because I think it should be the same rules as the regular season. We don't change the rule book. We don't change the size of the nets.
Yeah.
It's like it's the same rules. So I understand the complication to it, but maybe really it's not that complicated.
No. And look, I pushed Deputy Commissioner Bill Daly on this yesterday. Like it's in hindsight. I understand that. But when you initially created the salary cap environment, why didn't you close that loophole right from day one? Like, wouldn't that be considered a pretty huge oversight? You know, you look at the season that is, and it's governed by a salary cap for every part of the year other than the playoffs. Like, why wasn't there alarm bells sounding in the negotiations at that point?
Because I think some really smart people that built the salary cap whiffed.
Yeah.
I think they didn't really consider this scenario. Well, put it this way, they couldn't have considered this scenario because otherwise it would have been closed.
Agreed. Yeah.
And the players at the time, they agreed to the salary cap. They would have agreed to it in the playoffs because just for what you said, it's the salary cap all year, so we'll just run it through the playoffs. So it's a whiff and not a easy one to fix, but really I don't know who loses if it does get closed.
Yeah.
Because it's not doesn't happen 15 times a playoffs, but lately it's happened once a playoff.
It has. All right, let's talk about some things that could happen on the ice here. And none of this is going to happen in time for the playoffs, and it may not even happen in time for next year. Some of the tweaks that I'm going to throw at you. 3-on-3 overtime, there's been some discussion as to whether or not they forbid the regroup, right, where the players come back over the center ice and reset and then go back into the offensive zone on the attack. The league's decided, no, we don't need any more whistles. We don't need any more stoppages. Let's just let it play out moving forward. Couple of other things. They've talked about adding a coach's challenge, particularly for the deflection of the puck over glass, right? When the officials don't catch it, they call a penalty. You know, nobody wants to see that. And then you see the video review, right, on television, and you can clearly see that it was deflected off someone's stick. It doesn't happen very often.
But I was just going to say, Drakes, it is amazing how many times they call it. The four officials get together and they go, no, wait a minute, that deflect. Yeah. Like, and then you look at it in a review and they get it right.
Yeah.
But if they're willing to consider... If they're willing to consider video review for this, right, like on something that happens just once in a while, the commissioner's office will say, well, then we open up the door to
it never ends.
No. And so if they're going to do it, then they have to understand, and they do, that of course there's going to be other questions that come up. What I'd like to see them do is stick 3 minutes up on the clock as soon as the official gets to the video.
Yeah.
Now remember, they get there sometimes and the video's not queued up. There is a delay to it. Like, it takes some time to get everything from the league, because sometimes the officials are there in 10 seconds. But as soon as that video is turned on, turn the clock on. I don't know, 2 minutes, 3 minutes. How many times can you look at the same over and back thing? Like, just make a decision and let's move it along.
Coley Campbell, by the way, the head of hockey operations, took a bit of a shot at Connor McDavid, because McDavid, you remember the review where he said it took 15 minutes or whatever the number was. He said it didn't take 15 minutes. He goes, oh, that star player who said it took 15 minutes.
Yeah, he said it took 4 minutes and 15 seconds.
Yeah.
And Coley should know, if you're standing on the ice, 4 minutes feels like 15.
Yeah.
It feels like you're just standing around there.
It's amazing, though, the things that get under their skin. Like, just a comment like that just pisses them off. It was funny. Another thing, puck possession, right? And I guess it goes back to, you know, the original, was it Cale Makar play in the playoffs? Yeah. They discussed it. There's not much they can do. You know, the general managers always want things in black and white, right? Gray doesn't work because it's open to interpretation. And I think that's why they continue to discuss the idea of streamlining puck possession. All right. Well, sure. Puck crosses the line first, feet cross the line second, all is good. The problem is you've got Connor McDavid and Cale Makar and Nathan MacKinnon and all these great players whose skill set is elite that, you know, and this was Goalie's point. How do we know what their capabilities are in possessing the puck versus the vast majority of the NHL, where you can clearly see that they don't have puck possession? Would you just leave it alone? Just continue to watch it and leave it alone?
I would, because I don't, unless there's a solution, like, why put a rule in to complicate something? It's already, it's already a, you know, a thin, thin line anyway. And so I'll give you an example. You mentioned the black and white. So the reason video review in baseball works so well, and if they expanded it to balls and strikes, is because it's either a ball or a strike. Like, it's, there is not kind of a ball or a strike or whatever. It's a ball or a strike. In football, they went to the catch. The guy's hand has to be underneath the ball. And you can see that on video review.
Right.
Most of hockey's reviews, you can see. This play, I mean, how many times did we watch back and forth Makar go over the blue line?
Yeah.
And each time you see something different, or you think you see something different. Oh, but this is something where review is, it opens up this box of questions, and I'm in favor of review, but can you review, what's the next thing you're going to review? The other day, did you watch Vancouver and Colorado?
Yeah.
So Vancouver's got the lead. They clear the puck down there. No, it was Washington, I think. I'm sorry. It's Vancouver, Washington. They shoot the puck down the ice. There's an icing call. The Vancouver players first.
Yeah.
They call the icing. The linesman, the whole way back up the ice, is explaining to Didi Giuseppe why he called it the way. If he's explaining it, that means he knows, I think I maybe got this one wrong.
Right.
Ron McLean says on Hockey Night, well, I know that's not really the way the rule's written, but, you know, it's a good call. What the hell does that mean? Well, then why don't we just make it all up as we go along? But if you could review that, then they're going to review that icing call again. And as much as people say, oh, we want to get it right, nobody wants to sit in a damn building for 3 hours.
Correct.
They want to go to the game. They want it over in 2 hours and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
TV wants it over in 2 hours and 30 minutes because they need it in a tidy window.
Sure.
And so there's a lot of other factors that come to getting this thing right or wrong. And video never is as simple as it seems.
No. And look, I mean, we'll continue to talk about it in the media because the managers continue to talk about it, but it's not like they're itching for change here. It's just healthy conversation about if we can get it as close to perfectly right as we can, then let's at least have the conversation. But I doubt very much that they'll employ any of it here moving forward coming out of this meeting. So those are your headlines. Thank you to Tim Hortons.
Ready to roll? All right, let's roll.
Whoa. I'm rolling in it.
Play the 60th anniversary edition of Roll Up to Win on the Tim's app today.
Our interviews on Ray and Dregs brought to us by Canadian Club Whiskey, who have released the Canadian Club Invitation Series CC 15-year-old Sherry Cask, signature CC Classic 12-year-old whiskey finished with a secondary aging in Oloroso Sherry Casks. All right, pleased to be joined on the Ray and Dregs Hockey Podcast by Devon Taves of the Colorado Avalanche, and we're catching you on the road. So obviously, the grind continues for you and everyone in the National Hockey League, but the season is winding down. So such is the grind. Is there a point in the regular season where something clicks? Maybe it's, you know, individually as a team, whatever, where you, okay, well, this isn't the February blahs anymore. We're feeling the intensity and the playoff atmosphere that's starting to develop here.
Yeah, I think a little bit before the trade deadline, we started to feel that and started to feel what our team could be and where we were at. And obviously since the trade deadline, we've been playing really well. You know, the bodies we've brought in and that C-Mac and Joe brought in have really fit in really well. And a lot of times it takes time for those guys to get situated, to feel good. But, you know, all four of them have come in and done a really good job for us right away. So we're feeling it. We're playing playoff teams a lot right now and teams that are desperate to win hockey games. And we're just as desperate because, you know, the Central Division is tight right now. It's really tight. It's hard for us, you know, day in, day out to come and grind it out, but it's a lot of fun. You know, you enjoy playing these games where they matter for both teams. Just the other night, that game in Edmonton was awesome.
Well done, Cruz.
Both teams wanted it. It was a fast, fun hockey game. And, you know, most of the games down the stretch are like that too. So we're looking forward to it.
You guys won the Cup a couple of years ago, and now you've got a team that most people think is right at the very top again.
Yeah.
How does this team compare to your experiences you learned when you won the Cup a couple of years ago?
Yeah, the year we won the Cup, that might have been one of the deepest teams ever assembled. So we know it's virtually impossible, and you know the kind of cap world we're in right now to put a team like that and roster a team like that. So but yeah, we did a good job with adding depth. We feel like we're a four-line hockey team now. You know, earlier in the year we were taxing our top end guys a lot, and expecting a lot from them, and they were producing at a crazy clip for us and giving us chances to win every night. And now we're more of a four-line hockey team, 60 through the back and two really good goalies, you know, backing us up as well. So we're confident in the group we have and, you know, our ability to shut down top players as well.
You've always kind of flown under the radar a little bit, and then you get with these, you know, star-studded players in Colorado. Early in the year, though, you didn't love the way your team was playing. And it was like a lightning bolt that it came from you that, man, we got to get going here. What triggered that? Like, what made you go, you know what, now's the time to say, hey, we got to be better.
Yeah. You know, I like to fly under the radar. It's what I like to do. I don't like to be flashy or do things like that. And I just felt like our team was trending in a direction that we don't want to go. Mm. And we were being a little too lenient on ourselves and how we were playing, how we were losing games. And, you know, it just kind of bottled up in me a little bit. And I was a little frustrated, not just at a single individual. It's just more our team and what we're doing and what we're expecting of each other and just our awareness of how we're playing. And, you know, I think we, as a team, we were thinking that we were losing games a little bit, just by unfortunate circumstances or unlucky plays. And I think it was a lot more than that. You know, we pride ourselves with Benji so keen on details and being detailed with our game and our structure. And I didn't think we were anywhere near where, you know, we need it to be in order to be a, you know, a Stanley Cup contending team. And if that's what triggered it, so be it. I think our guys just were hyper aware of seeing that. And then once we talked through it and recognized it together, then everybody kind of took off together.
You mentioned Benzie, Jared Bednar, your coach. All of a sudden, he's one of the longest tenured guys in the league. You've grown up with him, or he's grown up with you. aside from the flow that he's got going right now, which is pretty glorious, that is pretty spectacular that he's bringing on right now. But how's he changed in the way he talks to a team that's won before, a veteran team, and as opposed to maybe when he was just getting going?
Yeah, I think he listens to the players a lot. He gives us a lot of say in our schedule, when we practice, when we don't, optional days, you know, what we're doing with video and such. If guys are thinking it's dragging on too long, or if he wants, you know, if we want him to be harder on guys and start nitpicking on little things to make ourselves great and dial in on our little details. So he's so good with that. And his video is just unbelievable. I've never seen anybody like him before with just how he's able to take the analytics and then use video to support the numbers and just give you such a clear picture. So we, the players, we always call it, he gives us a roadmap to success every night. And he's done such a good job, you know, with Ray and Prater and Brett, our video coach. They do such a good job. Those four work so hard in that room there. And then UC Garkler, our goalie coach, works hard with our goalies too on a lot of video and such. So, you know, our coaching staff does a great job of setting us up.
You mentioned a couple of minutes ago just the wild division that the Colorado Avalanche are fighting in right now, the Central with the likes of the Winnipeg Jets and the Dallas Stars, all fighting for that top spot in the division. Are you a scoreboard watcher? I mean, are you paying attention in game, or you know, as soon as the game is over, are you diving into the NHL site looking to see what's going on around the league, or specifically in the West?
Yeah, we're checking it out, especially on the West side. Just seeing who's winning, who's not on a nightly basis. You know, obviously trying to take care of our game first. That's, you can't do anything if you don't win your game. So, you know, we take care of our business and we check it after. And, you know, we know it's going to be a dogfight, and we like our chances just with how our team's playing right now. And, you know, at the end of the day, there's, what, 14, 15 games. It's going to be the most consistent team going down the stretch that's going to give themselves a home ice advantage. And wherever we end up, we're okay too. Yeah. We're not a team that, you know, lives and dies. Obviously, our home record is fantastic, and we love playing at home in front of our fans. But we're on a 4-game road trip here. We're 3-0 so far, so we're trying to build our away game a little bit. That's been a little bit lacking throughout the season, but we feel like we're building it in the right direction now.
Okay, so you're 3-0 on the trip. I did the game in Vancouver. What really stuck out for me was, even when it wasn't going really well, you guys were just kind of like plowing along. There was no, I don't know, there was no panic. There was nobody screaming and yelling on the bench. And is that probably just a product of you guys have been through it before, or confident in what you are as well, maybe?
Yeah, I think we recognize when our game is good and when it's not. And in that Vancouver game, we knew our game was good. You know, even coming in on a back-to-back, we had legs, we had energy, we had juice. We were doing the right things, and then sometimes circumstances just come about and you come down 2-0 in a game that you don't feel like you're down in a game and early in the first, and we stuck with it. And then to get that goal to make it 3-1 at the end of the second was kind of just an extra little wind in our sails there. We're like, okay, like, you know, we got one. We know we can get more here, even though we're playing really well. And we were able to come out in the third and just kind of take over that game. And, you know, even the night before in Calgary, we went down early in that game. I think twice in the first period, we were down a goal. And our team felt like we were playing good. And that's what's good, is we understand when our game is there and we're playing well, we don't need to change anything. We just keep kind of pushing forward and moving forward. And when our players don't have to get out of structure or try to do too much, that's when we can really succeed.
Well, you got two of them in the best. I want to tell me something about Makar and MacKinnon that we don't know, other than they're just like amazing to watch.
Yeah, you watch them off the ice and you'd be just as amazed at how detail oriented they are with everything they do in the gym, their nutrition habits, their sleep, their recovery. It's nonstop. They care so much about putting their best product on the ice and being the best they can for their team. And that's kind of bled through our team. We have a lot of guys that didn't do certain things at the beginning of the year or have learned to different recovery techniques or different things in the gym, and everybody kind of feeds off each other in that sense. And you know, our team's not a team that's fast getting out of the rinks. You know, after games, everybody's in the gym usually after a game, getting some work in on the bike, whatever it is. You know, our team just doesn't really stop. stop winning. It's like our fun is winning. Like we want to do whatever we can to win hockey games. That's what we enjoy doing, and we try to, you know, put our best foot forward with our recovery, our nutrition, our meals, our sleep. Everything that we do is kind of catered towards trying to win.
You know, I talked about flying under the radar, but like when you started, you know, you're at Quinnipiac for 3 years and then you signed with the Islanders and then you're in the American League for 2.5 years. Like at what point, like, are you thinking in that time, no, I know I'm an NHL player, or are you still just kind of clawing along and, you know, trying to get a foothold in?
Yeah, I think I left Quinnipiac after 3 years because I was at a point where I felt like I was dominating the college game. And that's what the point I wanted to get to, if I was going to leave early and put, you know, potentially, you know, a degree on the line, potentially, if I leave early, to make it a little more difficult to get my degree. That was the initial reason I went to college, was to get a degree so I have something to fall back on. I was lucky enough to finish that anyways. But
what were you thinking you could be an NHL guy when you left the BC Junior League? Or
no,
were you...
no, that at that point I was so grateful I got a full ride scholarship. I had looks, you know, my first 2 years of draft eligibility, you know, I talked to teams. I don't think it was ever really anything major. And then coming out of Quinnipiac after my freshman year, I got a lot of interest after that year and was able to get drafted by the Islanders. You know, I'm very grateful for that opportunity. And for me to leave college, I knew I had to dominate. I had to feel like I was the best player on the ice every night. And I got to that point. And then the American League is such a good developmental league. And I felt like over my first, you know, year and a half, 2 years there, I was doing a great job of developing. You know, Brent Thompson did a great job. He's with the Ducks now. He did a great job of developing me and helping mold my NHL game. And I got to the point down there where I felt like I was dominating. And then it was just about waiting for my opportunity, waiting for a chance. And, you know, I think a lot of players get discouraged thinking that success in that league should automatically lead to a chance, right, you know, to go to the NHL, but it doesn't work like that. It's a business, right? It's a numbers game. There's more to it than that. So I just kind of waited my time, and I knew it would come eventually if I just kept working and stayed with it. And, you know, I was fortunate to get that opportunity, I think, yeah, after 2.5 years.
Right. In the American League. That's a lot. That's enough.
Yeah. I had a shoulder surgery in there. After my second year, right around Christmas. Parceau was the GM at that point and said they were planning on calling me out, you know, a couple of weeks after the or before they heard about the shoulder issue, they were planning on calling me out. So that was, you know, a frustrating thing to hear.
Yeah.
But I knew in the long run, it would be better if I got this thing done. So I was able to get it done and came back. And I think I played 20 games in the American League the next year, and then they called me out. So it's a waiting game sometimes, and you just got to stick with it.
So I'm at the general managers meetings here in Florida, and talked to Doug Armstrong of the St. Louis Blues about this earlier. Obviously, he's been named the general manager of the 2026 Canadian Olympic team, and he'll oversee the international events from a Hockey Canada perspective moving forward. I mean, not to look too far ahead, but internationally speaking, is that on your radar? And how big of a goal would be achieved if you were named to that Olympic team in 26?
Yeah, it would be huge. I haven't played in many Hockey Canada events. I think I played World Junior A Challenge when I was playing in Surrey. I got that opportunity, so which was a great opportunity to get to. You know, with the likes of Troy Stetcher was there too. So, you know, good players coming to there too. But the Olympics is a dream. It's a dream. Yeah. And glad the NHL and IIHF got that worked out so that, you know, guys like me potentially could have an opportunity to live out a lifelong dream. And if I get that call, that's amazing. It's a dream of mine, but there's so many good players in this league, so many good players in Canada, especially on the back end. So it's always tough. You know, I don't want to be in that room making that decision right now with the amount of talent there is in the NHL right now, and especially the back end talent that's coming through Canada, US, all the teams. So it's going to be fun. The Four Nations, I think, is going to be a really cool thing that they're going to do as well. So it'll be fun to watch that as well.
Well, you're into the last 15 or so, like you said. This last, we'll let you go after this for me, is that how hard is it to just play the game in front of you, not look 3 weeks out. Because, I mean, we're all, you know, the guys that like to do what we do our game, but we're all we talk about is the playoffs, and yeah. that's, and we got nothing to do with it. Like, is it hard to, is it hard to stay in it or no?
Not right now. Cause we're still fighting for home ice. We're yeah. fighting for a lot. You know, every game means so much to us right now. When we get down to those, you know, last two or three games, and if things are still matter at that point, I think we're going to be like hyper-focused on that. But it's, you know, sometimes those things play out and everything's set with two or three games left. And then you can start looking forward. You can start kind of seeing who an opponent might be. But, you know, right now we got 14 games left, and we got Dallas and we got Winnipeg once each right now, which
right.
could be the difference moving forward. So we're just trying to give ourselves the best chance to get home ice and play as many games in front of our fans.
Well, so many great storylines around the National Hockey League. It's a terrific time of year as we brace for the postseason. Busy time for you as well. So thanks for joining us here, and all the best to you and the Avs moving forward.
Awesome. Thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
Yeah, all the best, Devon. Thanks, man.
Thanks, Jess.
Devon Taves of the Colorado Avalanche joining us this week on Ray and Dregs. And I don't know about you, Ray, but I'm, you know, again, he's in St. Louis, right? Wrapping up a road trip with the Avs. And I'm thinking to myself, as he was kind enough to donate some of his time, probably one of the last things I would want to do as a player on the road after practice is sit down and jibber jabber on a podcast for 20 minutes. But I mean, he had a good time. We had a good time. He's just a good dude.
He really is. And I will tell you, there is more dead time on a road trip than you, than you can imagine. So he was probably like, yeah, I could kill 20 minutes right
yeah,
there.
True.
I did like when we were at one point there is, you know, we lost his audio for a second. He's like,
yeah.
Oh, my wife's calling, you know, and so there goes your audio on your phone. And so it's, yeah, he's a terrific guy. He really is. And, you know, we talked at the top about his long road of,
yeah,
kind of inching his way along the hockey path and nobody really noticing. He went through the draft twice.
I know.
Nobody drafted him. Then he's at Quinnipiac.
Yeah.
And then he goes to the American League, and you're like, yeah. Uncle, at some point, you know, you're wondering what's going on. And I liked what he, you know, I asked about, you know, did you think you were an NHL player? He's like, no, I just want to get a degree.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, I think that's so cool that he, and it probably helps his mindset. It just kind of, I just play and, oh, now I'm really good. And him and Makar are like so good together. He's such a great skater.
Yeah.
That the two of them start flying around there, and it's a tough team to forecheck when they're on the ice.
If you're the Islanders, and look, at the time, I think the Islanders made that deal primarily for cap reasons, right?
They did, yes.
Yeah, they knew what was coming. But, and then, you know, when you make a trade like that, you hope for the best. It's not like, you know, they knew that Devon Taves was going to develop into the defenseman that we're watching on a nightly basis, but they're probably pretty happy for the guy, right? That he's had the opportunity and he's made the most of it, even though that trade looks a little ridiculous in hindsight.
Well, I mean, like anybody that's in a manager's chair, you inherit what the guy in front of you did.
Yeah.
And so at the time, the GM was Gar Snow, and he made a trade for cap reasons. They had Adam Pellick and Scott Mayfield, I think, and Taves were all pretty much the same age.
Yeah.
And they knew cap-wise they weren't going to be able to chew all of it. And so Taves was the guy that they decided. He was, don't forget, when he got traded, he was mostly in the American League.
Yeah.
You know, he had only played, I want to say maybe 40 games. I might have that wrong, but I think it was about 40 games. And Colorado trades two draft picks, and so look at, hey, I just thought of this. Colorado traded three draft picks for their starting goalie.
Yeah.
Georgiev. Because he needed to get out of New York for a lot of reasons, one of them being he was never going to beat out Igor Shesterkin.
Right.
They trade two draft picks and get Devon Taves. And so I would say if you're trading draft picks and you're looking for a return, those are
two pretty five good draft returns.
Yeah, five draft picks well spent right there.
No kidding. All right, buddy, what's your week look like?
Really interesting, fun day today. Buffalo Sabres are here in Vancouver. So my brother-in-law, Donnie's coaching the game for the Sabres. Cammy will be in the manager's booth and I'll be between the benches. So that'll be fun. And we'll see Donnie after the game. And our sons will go down and see Donnie this morning. The Sabres won in Seattle last night. So they have a optional in the morning. They won't be on the ice. And so they go see their uncle for a bit. And so that'll be a fun one. And then Thursday night, I guess we'll be taping Thursday, but Thursday night, Montreal's in town here. And so that'll be, I'm doing that game as well. And we probably should, even though there's no detail or anything, just wish Marty St. Louis and his family all the best as he's away from the team dealing with a family matter.
Yes, absolutely. All right. Well, we'll try and reload on Thursday and we'll have a full wrap of some of what we talked about today. In the GM
Are you just collecting Fairfield points this week or what do you got going?
It's a Marriott, right? So you do get the Bonvoy advantage. I asked for the upgrade, by the way. Yeah, that's
That's pretty much it.
Who's kidding you?
Yeah, there you go.
All right, buddy. Have a great week.
We'll talk to everybody on Thursday. Thanks for listening.
You bet. Thank you to our sponsors who continue to support Ray and Dregs, our title sponsor, Canadian Club Whiskey, and Tim Hortons. Until next time, stay safe, everybody.